Let's read together Job chapter 2. In this chapter, we have the second test of Job's faith, the test of personal health. Let's begin by reading the first 8 verses. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil, and still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life." Let's begin our study of this second chapter of Job with some background notes. In Job chapter 1, we saw the first test of Job's faith, the test of possessions. God allowed Satan to take away all that Job owned, including his sons and daughters. But Job remained faithful. He even worshiped the Lord and gave that well-known testimony of the sovereignty of God in verse 21 of chapter 1. "The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Job 1:21. So Satan was wrong about Job. He thought Job was a lot like other people, including some believers. Take away their possessions and they will blame God. But not Job. We read in the last verse of Job chapter 1, "In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong." Job 1, verse 22. However, Satan did not give up his attacks. Here in chapter 2, we see that Satan still thinks that Job serves God for selfish reasons. When the angels are again gathered before God to present themselves, God reminded Satan that Job was still steadfast after the test of possessions. Verse 3. Satan answered God, "Skin for skin." That is, Job was willing to give up his animals and even the lives of his own children to save his own skin, not because he was that committed to God. Satan was convinced that if he could just get at Job's body, Job would capitulate and openly curse God. After all, a man will give up anything to save his own life. So once again, Satan is given permission and allowed to test Job's faith by affecting Job's body with sickness and disease. But he cannot take Job's life. God's protective hedge about Job is taken down only so far, and only under God's overall control. You know, it's been said that when God allows us to enter the oven of affliction, he keeps his sovereign hand on the controls. We see that in the book of Job, and we know that is true in our own lives as well. Let's move now to our doctrinal points for this second chapter of Job. Doctrinal point number 1, health and wealth evangelists misunderstand a believer's sufferings. Health and wealth evangelists misunderstand a believer's sufferings. Verses 7 and 8. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. Job is really in bad shape, isn't he? His friends don't even recognize him. Verse 12. Job had oozing boils all over his body that he had to scrape with a piece of broken pottery. Look over at chapter 7, verse 5, for a further description. "My flesh is caked with worms and dust. My skin is cracked and breaks out afresh." Job, chapter 7, verse 5. How horrible to have worms crawling in and out of your boils. Now, a number of suggestions have been made for Job's particular medical condition, even elephantiasis, but we can't be sure. In any case, the bottom line for Job's condition is that God allowed Satan to affect Job's body, but not take his life, as a test of faith and to prove to Satan that Job's faith was not for selfish reasons. The health and wealth evangelists have a hard time with the book of Job. The health and wealth evangelists like to preach that if you have a strong enough faith, you should be healthy and wealthy. After all, you're a child of the king. Believers should live like royal children of the king. And if you're not healthy and wealthy, it must be because you have sinned or you don't have enough faith. Well, what about Job? You know, that's the first question I ask folks who start pushing the prosperity gospel. The health and wealth evangelists are not wrong about justification, that salvation is only through Christ, and there is only one way of salvation. And the health and wealth evangelists are not wrong when they say that Satan may be involved in a believer's sickness, as long as they recognize that God is in ultimate control. But the health and wealth evangelists misunderstand suffering. They fail to see God's good purposes in suffering. They fail to acknowledge that it may even be the will of God for a believer to suffer and be poor for a lifetime. The idea of casting out Satan and having more faith, which guarantees health and wealth, is not taught in the Bible. Challenge your health and wealth prosperity gospel friends to seriously read and study and interpret the book of Job. You can be sure that there will be a change to their shallow theology if they seriously consider the book of Job. Health and wealth evangelists misunderstand a believer's sufferings. Doctrinal point number two. Family and friends may misunderstand a believer's sufferings. Family and friends may misunderstand a believer's sufferings. Verses 9 and 10. Then Job's wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God? And shall we not accept adversity?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Job chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. I guess we'd have to conclude that Job's wife was not the most supportive wife in the world, right? She's convinced that God is unfair, and she has given up hope that her husband will be healed. Why not just curse God and commit suicide and be out of your misery? That's the counsel of Job's wife. Job's response to his wife was the right one, because the end of verse 10 says, "In all this, Job did not sin with his lips." Now, what was Job's response to his wife? He rightly reasoned that his wife's conclusion was not the right conclusion. The right conclusion was that God not only gives prosperity, but allows adversity as well. This is solid biblical doctrine, then and today, but often misunderstood, even by family members. Now, in verses 11 through 13, we are introduced to Job's three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. Let's read these verses. Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, each one came from his own place, Eliphaz, the Temanite, Bildad, the Shuhite, and Zophar, the Naamathite. For they had made an appointment together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they raised their eyes from afar and did not recognize him, they lifted their voices and wept. And each one tore his robe and sprinkled dust on his head toward heaven. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. Here we have the good news and the bad news of Job's three friends. The good news is that they cared for Job, and they went to counsel and comfort Job. The bad news, as we'll see in the rest of the book of Job, is that they give bad counsel because they misunderstand Job's sufferings. Family and friends may misunderstand a believer's sufferings. And that brings us to our practical application for Job chapter 2. Practical application number one. Don't forget Job when confronted with a question of euthanasia. Don't forget Job when confronted with a question of euthanasia. I'm reading some excerpts from an essay I wrote some time ago entitled, "Is Euthanasia a Euphemism?" Now, this whole essay can be found on our website, growingchristians.org. Quote, "The word euthanasia literally means good death or easy death. Euthanasia is the act of killing, for reasons of mercy, persons that are hopelessly sick or handicapped or injured. Consequently, euthanasia is more commonly known as mercy killing. But is killing for reasons of mercy somehow less than killing? Isn't mercy killing just a euphemism for murder?" And now, skipping down to page 2 of this essay, "Well, what about the person who is going through extreme suffering or experiencing intense pain due to illness or injury? Isn't euthanasia justified in such a case?" The book of Job gives some guidelines here. Job is well known for his patient endurance through much suffering. Some insight into the extent of Job's horrible and painful physical condition can be seen in Job chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, Job 7, verse 5, Job 13, verse 28, and Job 30, verses 16 through 18, and Job 30, verse 30. Wouldn't an easy and merciful death been much better for Job than the continuous torturous pain of worms eating away at his body? Even Job's wife suggested that it would be better to curse God and die than to go on living in such a miserable and painful condition. Job himself certainly wanted to die. He longed for death. See Job chapter 3, verses 20 through 22. But Job chose to endure. Job recognized that his suffering was by divine permission and purpose. The fact that the end of Job chapter 2, verse 10 states that Job did not sin in all of this leaves no doubt that Job's analysis of the situation was correct. His decision to endure the suffering, rather than having his life taken before God's time, was right. Again, the reason why God allows suffering is not the question here. The conclusion here in Job chapter 2 is that to mercifully terminate a life because of suffering or pain is not justified. It is wrongful taking of human life. It is murder. End of quote. Excerpts from an essay I wrote entitled, "Is Euthanasia a Euphemism?" Don't forget Job when confronted with a question of euthanasia. And practical application number 2, comfort your hurting friend with your silent presence. Comfort your hurting friend with your silent presence. You know, one of the biggest obstacles we face in reference to our hurting friends is, what do we say to them? Did you ever reluctantly visit your hurting friend in the hospital, for example, because you didn't know what to say? Listen, you don't have to say much. Just your silent presence can bring comfort. Job's three friends were with Job for 7 days in silence. In fact, it would have been better if they never started to preach to Job about his suffering. The fact that they wept and showed grief and identified with Job in this way was enough at this point. Don't feel that you have to talk or preach or defend God or explain everything or be a professional counselor or comforter to your hurting friend. Just be there. Comfort your hurting friend with your silent presence.